So thank you. I'm talking about entanglement entropy in loop quantum gravity. Okay, so here's the plan. So first I'm going to start with a bit of background and some definitions. In particular, I'm going to define what I mean by entanglement entropy. I'm going to introduce the Schmidt decomposition and its relation to entanglement entropy. I'm going to calculate the entanglement entropy for a class of states, the spin network states. I'm going to look at applications of this calculation. In particular, we can say something about the compare the results to the isolated horizon framework for black hole entropy. And we can look at corrections to the area law. And finally conclude. The basic problem, observers outside a black hole see thermal radiation at the Hawking temperature. Using this fact, we can figure out what the entropy should be. And it's given by the Bekenstein-Hawking formula, the area of the horizon over 4 in Planck units. In fact, we find that such an entropy occurs for a cosmological horizon, so for example in De Sitter space, and also for acceleration horizons. So this is in the case of the Unruh effect, where an accelerating observer in the vacuum sees a thermal state. And so the problem, or the challenge for quantum gravity, is to find some statistical description of this entropy. So the statistical description I want to consider is entanglement entropy. So suppose we have a quantum field theory on some manifold M, with sigma being space, and a particular state in the Hilbert space. Then for each region of space, we get a tensor product decomposition of the Hilbert space. This allows us to define a density matrix for each region of space, which is given by tracing out the degrees of freedom outside of that region. And so we get a particular entropy associated to each region of space. And that's called the entanglement entropy. It's called that because it represents the degree to which fields inside omega are entangled with the fields outside. And so the proposal that I want to consider is that the black hole entropy is accounted for by the entanglement entropy. These are the same thing. And the reason one might think this is that the horizon forms a kind of a causal barrier, and so you'd expect that observers exterior to the black hole, what they see, the radiation they see, should not depend on what is deep inside the black hole. And so their state should be, the state that they see is formed by tracing away the degrees of freedom on the interior. So the plan of this talk is to apply this to loop quantum gravity. In particular, the Hilbert space to consider is the space of cylindrical functions of an SU2 connection, that is the functions depending on only finitely many holonomies, and the state we want to consider is a spin network state. So a useful tool in order to calculate this quantity is the Schmidt decomposition. So every state in a tensor product Hilbert space has such a Schmidt decomposition. This is just the generalization of the, you can think of this as a generalization of the singular value decomposition, or of the usual spectral decomposition in terms of eigenvalues. So we can find an orthonormal set in the Hilbert space of omega, and one in the Hilbert space of omega complement, such that the state takes this diagonal form, and the diagonal elements, or rather the squares of them, are a set of real numbers, positive real numbers, which sum to 1. And these are called the Schmidt coefficients, and the number of the Schmidt coefficients is called the Schmidt rank. The reason why this is useful for entanglement entropy is that if we know the Schmidt decomposition of a state, then we can very easily compute the partial trace over either subsystem, getting a reduced density matrix. And in fact, if we perform that computation, we arrive directly at the diagonal form of the density matrix. And in fact, the spectra, or rather the non-zero spectra of both the density matrices agree. So in particular, we can compute the entanglement, the entropy of either one of those density matrices and find that they're the same. And just given in terms of the Schmidt coefficients as by the usual Shannon entropy formula. Right. So to compute this for spin networks, we need this fact, which is a decomposition of a link state. So the link state is just defined as a matrix element of a holonomy of the connection. So you take the holonomy along some curve gamma, and you put it in the J representation, look at the matrix elements. That defines a complex number for each connection, so it defines a state. Now splitting this curve into two pieces, gamma 1 and gamma 2, gives a tensor product decomposition of the Hilbert space of cylindrical functions on gamma into the product of cylindrical functions on gamma 1 and on gamma 2. to express the link state as a state in this tensor product space, you simply insert a trivial intertwiner at the point where gamma 1 and gamma 2 meet, and this just leads directly to this decomposition of the link state. And if you look at that, that's in fact a Schmidt decomposition. So as C ranges over this index, the link states on gamma 1 are all orthogonal to each other. The link states on gamma 2 are all orthogonal to each other. The coefficients in front are all equal. They're, so the Schmidt coefficients are the squares of these, 1 over 2j plus 1, and the Schmidt rank is just 2j plus 1. So using this Schmidt decomposition, so we can start computing Schmidt decompositions for spin network states. So the simplest possible spin network state is the Wilson loop, and in terms of the link state, it's just given by taking the link state of a closed curve and intertwining the beginning and the end point with another trivial intertwiner, so by this formula here. And we can apply our identity, the decomposition of the link state, apply it at... So supposing that our curve, our Wilson loop, crosses the boundary of our set omega, then what we do is we simply apply this identity at each of the points where the curve crosses the boundary. That gives us a Schmidt decomposition of the Wilson loop state. And you can see that because as now we have two indices, A and B, and as they range from 1 to 2j plus 1, you get an orthonormal set again with 2j plus 1 coefficient, 2j plus 1 squared coefficients now, and each of them are equal. And so once again, we can compute the entanglement entropy just from these coefficients. And it's just given by twice the log of 2j plus 1. And this generalizes very easily to the case where a Wilson loop intersects the horizon multiple times. So in particular, we just apply that identity, say, n times. We get an n-fold tensor product, n summations. We can group those states together in such a way that all the odd-numbered ones are inside omega, all the even-numbered ones are outside of omega. The Schmidt rank is 2j plus 1 to the n, and so the entanglement entropy is simply n times 2j plus 1. So already we can see at this level that the entanglement entropy counts the number of intersections of the curve with the boundary. So this is very reminiscent of the area operator, which does the same thing with a different function of j. And we can also generalize this to an arbitrary spin network state. Without going into the details, you have a spin network state that's a graph, a set of spin labels, and a set of intertwiners. The spin network can also be expressed as this sort of superposition of link states. What we can do is we consider the set of punctures again, where the spin network intersects the boundary. We apply our identity at each of those, and we get one summation for each of the links that intersect the boundary, going from 1 up to 2j plus 1. One has to check that these states are orthogonal, and one can. And so this is simply the Schmidt decomposition with a Schmidt rank given by the product of the dimensions of all those representations, 2j plus 1. So we arrive at this fairly straightforward formula for the entanglement entropy of the spin network. It's simply a sum over punctures with this coefficient, log of 2j plus 1, at each point. Now, the Schmidt decomposition does more than that. We can compute not just the spectrum of these density matrices, but we can actually figure out what they are. So you start with a spin network state. You take the partial trace of the exterior of this region. So omega is the shaded region. And you get this spin network state, which is supported on this open spin network. Now we know that a pure spin network state can't end at a point. This would correspond to choosing a state in the representation space invariant under the action of the group. But if you allow yourself to go to mixed states, you can choose a mixed state in that space. In particular, if you choose the maximally mixed state, it will be invariant under the action of the group. And so if you essentially couple the maximally mixed state on each of these spaces to each of the endpoints of the spin network, each time you do that introduces an entropy, which is the log of the dimension, log of 2j plus 1. And so we can call this a mixed spin network state. If you like, it's a gauge invariant state. But a mixed state. So, one of the things we can do with this calculation is, so far I've just considered the case where the spin network just passes through the boundary. I can maybe discuss that later. Maybe remind me once at the end. So suppose instead of this approach we wanted to take a different approach where we, for comparison, we could try and treat the horizon as an inner boundary. So impose some boundary conditions there so that instead of having a theory of spin networks that cross the horizon and penetrate through the horizon, we could insert this or construct this Hilbert space on the of states on the boundary. One of the properties we'd like this to have is that the physics on the exterior is unchanged. So for each spin network state that covers the exterior and the interior, there should exist some state S prime in this new Hilbert space you've constructed, which just agrees on the outside. So it should be the same spin network state to all the observers on the exterior. So using this state S prime, we can trace out the bulk, we can trace out omega, and get a mixed state on the boundary. And using the fact that the spectrum of the reduced density matrix on the exterior is the same as the spectrum of the reduced density matrix on the boundary, we find that this state actually picks out a subspace of a boundary Hilbert space, and the dimension is given by the rank of the rank of the density matrix, which is the Schmidt, same as the Schmidt rank of the original state S. And it's just given by a product over all the punctures of 2j plus 1. And in fact, we see almost exactly the same thing in the isolated horizons approach. So in this case, you have an isolated horizon Hilbert space, which consists of open spin networks in omega in the exterior, and it consists of U1 Chern-Simons states on the punctured boundary. And these are coupled in such a way that the places where the spin network intersect the boundary are the same as the punctures in the Chern-Simons theory. Now, in this theory, if you trace over the exterior, you get a maximally mixed state as expected on this one subspace, which is this space of Chern-Simons theory on the punctured boundary, and its dimension agrees asymptotically with what we would expect from the entanglement entropy. So what we can see is using this approach in terms of entanglement, we can actually get the same result for the dimension, which is the part that goes into the state counting. And we haven't had to introduce any of the machinery of quantizing an isolated horizon. So finally, I want to talk about corrections to the black hole entropy. So to the entropy area law. So the quantity that we've found is not just a multiple of the area as it is for pure gravity. It's a more general thing. And so we can ask, is this because of some kind of, does this mean that loop quantum gravity predicts some corrections to the area law? And in fact, there's already a classical theory of corrections to the area law that we can compare it to. So Walls showed that if you take this sort of arbitrary corrections to gravity, but you keep diffeomorphism invariants, then the black hole entropy is given by this more general quantity. It's an integral over the horizon, but the quantity is not just the sort of natural volume form on the horizon, which should give you the area. It's this more general quantity Q, which is a Noether charge. It depends on the particular Lagrangian that you have. And now, this formula looks an awful lot like our result. So we know in the case of the area operator, you take something which is an integral over the horizon, and you find that when you quantize that, you get a sum over punctures. So we have the classical black hole entropy behaving like an integral over the horizon, and we have this quantity, the entanglement entropy, which is a sum over punctures. So a question we could ask, rather speculatively, is whether this corresponds to some geometric quantity, Is there some function Q of our fields that when we quantize this, turn it into an operator, it actually gives the same formula that we have for the entanglement entropy? And the idea is that if we identify such a Q with the classical black hole entropy, then we could perhaps look at corrections that this would imply to the Lagrangian. If we identify Q with a Noether charge, that tells us something about the theory. So the what's interesting about this is that the black hole entropy formula actually contains information about physics, about not just of black holes, but in general. All right, so just to conclude, this entanglement entropy approach to the black hole entropy provides sort of a natural description of the entropy of a black hole. It explains why there should be an entropy associated to a horizon. It can be computed explicitly in the case of spin network state as its number of punctures. It agrees asymptotically with the isolated horizon result, but it is more general in the sense that one can imagine applying this to something like a horizon that's expanding or an observer-dependent horizon where we don't expect to have any particular boundary conditions there. So, and as an open question, can we express this entanglement entropy as a geometric quantity, and do these are these corrections that you get meaningful? Do they predict anything interesting? Do they match any effective theory or anything like that? So, thank you. That's a fair question. And one of the inspirations for this work is this result by Ted Jacobson that shows that you can, if you assume that this entropy is actually a universal quantity, that it actually does apply to general horizons. And by that, what I mean is that any point in space can be a horizon. If you have an observer who is moving toward that point and accelerating away, they will see that as a horizon. Now, the particular entropy that you would compute isn't meaningful to, I mean, I could take a piece of this room and compute, you know, this formula, and that wouldn't be meaningful to me, but how an observer who actually is accelerating and for whom this actually is a region that they can't access, it is a causal barrier to them, and it is natural to trace over that region. And in fact, this is I think this is very much in the spirit of something like the Unruh effect, where you have a vacuum state. You consider, say, a left and right wedges, and you have an observer who's accelerating, and you can express the state as a state in the tensor product. You can of the left wedge and the right wedge, and you find that in order to get his thermal state, you have to trace out. So it's very similar to the procedure that you use to get a thermal state. It's just in this case, in that case, the entropy is divergent. In this case, it's finite. Does that answer the question, really?
All definitions of entropy has to be
right.
You cannot just take something which has to do with some sections of spin network or random surface, but they are both to get a quantity which got the most important. Unless you're calculating
okay.
Information in it.
You mean about the fact that this surface is a horizon, that's constrained to actually be a black hole? Yes. So I agree with you there, this way of looking at corrections is, I admit it's very speculative, but There is some. So, I would look at this in the spirit of this work by Jacobson, which I mentioned briefly, and where what he does is he actually he just considers any part of space and assumes that there's a universal entropy density there, and you can actually, if you apply local thermodynamics from the point of view of this observer, you actually you get something similar. Now, it's not clear that it's the same thing that Wald gets, but it's also not clear to me that this expression wouldn't generalize to a case like that. So I agree there's much more to do.